Before starting, I just want you to have in mind these two questions and if you already know what does it mean. So what you know, what is the distinction between a kinematical phase space, a radius phase space, or here sometimes we call physical phase space. And also, do you know any canonical quantization procedure? Do you have several? Do you know one or any? Okay, so what are we going to do now today? We are going to go back to this parameterized particle example and do the canonical analysis of this system, and then look at what is a physical phase space, how do we go so from here, how do we get to the physical phase space, and what are the Dirac observables, what does it mean, and why is it interesting to look at them. And then we will go to the Dirac program. I'm going to present it in general, and then we're going to apply it to the parameterized particle, and then if we have time, we will then start with gravity. Okay. The idea will be to do the same thing we did for the parameterized particle. So first do the canonical analysis. This is just the classical part. It's going to already take some time because we need to figure out what are the good variables we're going to use, and then we will apply the Dirac program. Okay, so yesterday we talked about so the canonical from the Hamiltonian formulation for constraint system, and in particular we talk about the different kind of constraint you can have. And I just want to come back on this quickly because one aspect was maybe not very well, not very clear. So you remember that how do you start? So you start by an action written in terms of a Lagrangian, and then to go to the Hamiltonian formulation, you do this Legendre transformation. So you first try to define your momenta. And so when this is not invertible, this is going to give you the primary constraint.
This is already the canonical analysis, or we are just doing a review?
No, it's just a quick review because I want to, especially, a quick review on what was important yesterday, and I want to specify something that I think I missed yesterday. So just to make sure that this is clear. And so you remember that you want this constraint to be preserved over time evolution. Okay, so this means you're going to look at the time derivative of this, and you want this to be zero. If it's not the case, then you're going to get more constraints. So the first one are going to be, you're going to impose by hand secondary constraint, and et cetera. So you redo this analysis until you end up with all your constraints. And at the end, so you have the full set of constraints. And this is equal to 0, which is going to define the constraint surface. Okay, so starting with your primary constraint, already you are in your phase space. And already when you have a primary constraint, you're going to get a kind of primary constraint surface, and then you're going to constrain more and more if you add constraints. So at the end, your constraint surface is going to be smaller than that. Okay, and in fact, the total Hamiltonian here, it's not going to be at the end. Your total Hamiltonian is not only the one where you add primary constraint, but you can add all the constraint. The point is that for secondary and tertiary, et cetera, constraints, the Lagrange multiplier will be already usually fixed. Okay, naturally, you will find in the other, going on with the other constraint, that it's going to fix this value. So the only free parameter, it's what we said yesterday, are the one coming from the primary constraint. Okay, and so the question we were asking yesterday is, in which situation these three parameters are fixed, can we choose them or not? Okay, so here, three parameters are going to be the U alpha associated to primary constraint. And again, so now the question is, are they really free or not, or can we choose one? And to answer this question, then you need to go to the analysis if you have first class or second class constraint. Okay? And so here, from the full set of constraints, you can now make this distinction between first class and second class, where first class constraints are a subset of constraints that has the Poisson bracket is weakly zero, so meaning it's zero on the constraint surface. Okay, and these are these first class constraints we're going to generate the gauge transformation. Okay, so, and it's of course in this case where you have the gauge transformation that then you will have still some free parameter, because you remember that one particularity of gauge transformation is that starting from the same initial condition, then you will have different possible evolution, okay? Which if you want to have something physical, we will have to say that these different evolutions are equivalent, okay?
Yeah. I don't understand which U alpha are free. They're associated with like first class, second class, primary, secondary.
So
yesterday I wrote that the constraint with the class, then they are fixed U alpha. And now we say the three is like primary constraints.
Yeah, so when you do this analysis, you will end up with only three parameters associated with some of the primary constraint. And then when you do this analysis, so this is two different analyses, okay? So here you start, you get primary constraint, and then you need to figure out all your constraints. Mm-hmm. And when you do this analysis, you will see that at the end, if you end up with some free parameter, these free parameters are going to be associated with primary constraints.
Also, when we write H, we do not put the secondary constraints. We just put the primary.
No, here you can add once you are done with your analysis, the H you can consider is really the H where you associate all the constraints here. Right. Okay, and this you can do that, of course, because in fact this since these constraints are of course zero on the surface constraint, this means that in fact on the constraint surface there is no difference between H and H0. Okay, so of course, and what is important is the constraint surface now. So what happens is that of course you're modifying your H total, so outside the constraint surface these two objects are different, but on the constraint surface these two objects are the same. Okay, so you need to work with these two. And so here it's with all the constraints. Okay, and so when you do all this analysis here, you will figure out that the only free parameters, if you have some, are going to be associated with primary constraint. Then now you can do another analysis once you have all your constraints, which is make the distinction between first class and second class, and the first class constraints are going to be the one which generates the gauge transformation, so for which you will have free parameter. But here, free parameter, not all primary constraint will have free parameter. For example, in the first example we have seen in the tutorial, at the end U is fixed and you don't have any gauge transformation, and this also means that if you do this analysis of all your constraints, you don't have any first class constraint.
So to have a free U alpha, it has to be a primary and the first class constraint.
So yeah, this is what I wanted to make sure that this was clear. Okay, so this was just for the analysis of constraint, which is quite important as soon as you're going to deal with a constraint system. Oh. Yeah, it's working. Maybe let's try to go. Okay, great. Okay, so now let's move to the parameterized particle and do the analysis of this particle, the canonical analysis. And then maybe let me just yeah, maybe I will mention that later. Okay, so the parameterized particle. So the idea was to introduce artificially, so starting from a non-relativistic free particle, to introduce artificially that the time is also a dynamical variable. So for this, we introduce an additional unphysical parameter, of course, and we're going to see in doing the analysis that it's unphysical. So this is our action. Okay, so of course the starting point, if you want to, you can rewrite what is just for the free particle. So it's just over dt, and then where here the dot means that it's the derivative with respect to the time, and here the prime here means that it's the derivative with respect to this parameter s. And so why is it this system is interesting is that it's really going to mimic what we have in general relativity. And in particular, we introduce this way, we introduce a gauge transformation, a gauge symmetry, which is the symmetry by reparametrization. Okay, so this action is invariant under reparametrization. So now let's do the canonical analysis. So you start by computing the momenta associated with the two. So now your phase space is going to be four-dimensional. Okay, you have two configuration variables, so you're going to have two momenta. And so here it's quite direct. So you get for the momentum associated to the t variable, and for the momentum associated with the q variable, then you're going to get that this is okay. So you see that these two relations are not invertible because they are related. So here we end up with a constraint, and so we end up with a primary constraint. So which is just a relation that you can write between the two. Okay, so here we have that you can write that Pt is equal to plus Pq squared. So this is the primary constraint. And you can check that there is no more constraint. And so, of course, as soon as you have only one constraint, this constraint is going to be first class. So indeed, it's going to generate it generates the gauge transformation. Okay, so we have the momenta, which generate a constraint. And what is the Hamiltonian? So if you try to write the Hamiltonian, it just defines just first the Hamiltonian without the constraint. And in fact, in this case, we're going to see that. And so I let you check that what you get here is proportional to the constraint. OK, so here T prime can really already be interpreted as a Lagrangian multiplier. And so what does it mean? It means that our system here is what we call a totally constrained system, okay? And more generally, we're just going to say that H, because so here if we add the primary constraint, it's just going to add again the constraint. So it's just that H is a function on the phase space time the constraint, where here this can be interpreted as is very similar to what you're going to get in general relativity if you work with a metric variable. And you do the ADM formalism where you have a lapse function. Okay, so now what is the flow generated by H? Okay, so we need to get the flow, we need to compute the following equation.
What is N of S?
So this is just your Lagrange multiplier, okay? And so if we do the analogy with...
cannot depend on t prime and q prime?
Yeah, but now all the functions are function of this parameter, okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so just you can write it just as a function of your parameter. And so by analogy to what you will get in general relativity, we can call this a Laplace function. Any questions? Okay. Okay, so here what is important is that we have a totally constrained system. And I'm going to come back on that very soon. And it's also what is going to happen in the context of gravity. Okay, and so all the, I don't know if you already heard about the what we call the, we refer as the problem of time, but this is related to the fact that you have a totally constrained system. So what does it mean to have a dynamical evolution if this is a constraint? But I'm going to come back on that. Just maybe first, before that, let's...
Totally constrained system means that h is equal to zero on the physical fixed space?
Okay, so it's going to be, here you only have one constraint. In the case of gravity, we're going to have several constraints, but our Hamiltonian is going to be a linear combination of these constraints. So again, it's vanish on the constraint surface. And so let's look at the flow generated by H. So this means we want to look at this equation, and PQ divided by M, you get, if you compute this one, then you see that this is just given by N, and all the other are going to be zero. So h is just a function of pq and pt, so this is going to give you zero. And so from here, you can see that now, starting from the same initial condition here, solving this equation, okay, this differential equation, if even starting with the same initial condition, since this depends on n, you can get two different solutions just because you can change the value of n here, okay? So here, this means that starting from a given initial condition, you can get different solution because you can have different value so now what does it mean, what are the relevant questions in this context that we can ask, okay? Because it seems that here, just to talk about the evolution of q with respect to q as a function of s is not physically relevant, okay? You can have two different evolution starting from the same initial condition. So here, what is really important is going to be what we relational questions, okay? So what do I mean by that? So this means that, for example, a question could be, what is going to be the value of Q of S when T of S is equal, for example, to 3? Okay, so this kind of question. So here, this means that really relevant questions are going to be relational questions. So for example, I can ask, What is the value? Of Q of S when T of S is equal, for example, to a given value, 3. And we will see that this is indeed what we're going to use, this kind of relational questions, to build really the physical observable, the Dirac observable, okay? Because it's what we're going to use. We're going to fixing a gauge, more or less, is going to choose a given value for one of these variables. And then we're going to look at what is the value of the other function when this given, when we have fixed. So to fix a gauge is more or less to choose one value, to fix a gauge is to choose one given value for one of this function. And then look at the value of the other function with respect to when this is satisfied. Okay, so this is what we're going to do when we're going to talk about Dirac observable. But this question of relational question is very natural, in fact, in the context of gravity. And just for example, if you consider in cosmology, the object of study is going to be the universe. Okay, so the universe is everything. So usually, therefore, the type of question you will be able to ask is, what is some portion of the universe doing when the portion we use to define our clock is going to measure, for example, the year 1917? Okay, so this is the kind of question you can ask. And just now to briefly mention general relativity, but we're going to come back on that. In general relativity, the gauge group is going to be the diffeomorphism group. So you will see that, again, as I mentioned already, the theory is totally constrained. So again, this means that the Hamiltonian is going to be a function of constraint. So the fact that the canonical Hamiltonian is going to vanish on the constraint surface means that the gravitational observable do not evolve dynamically in the way we think usually. So this is can be seen as a paradox, but it's just really an apparent paradox, which lies in the fact that in the canonical Hamiltonian, is going to describe time evolution in time coordinate, which you know that in GR GR is invariant under time general coordinate transformation. So indeed, the fact to talk about the evolution about one given coordinate is not really meaningful, okay? So it's meaningless. So really what is important is to talk about the evolution with respect to the evolution of other fields. So for example, you can talk about the evolution of a given field with respect to some other matter content of the universe, okay? So these are the kind of questions which are going to be important. And really this idea is that what is really important is relational question is going to come back when we're going to define this Dirac observables. Okay, so just here to, so here the idea is just to tell you that, okay, you have given a starting initial condition, you can have different evolution, but maybe this is not so bad if you ask the right type of question. Okay? And this is what we're going to do to go back to the really the physical degrees of freedom. Okay, so now let's talk about the physical phase space here and the difference between kinematical first. And physical phase space. So I guess before looking at any gauge theory, the situation you were most familiar with was in physics was, so if you had a phase space, okay, a given point in phase space, well then if then, so this is a phase space, then this is the space-time evolution. So you can have hypersurface where the t is fixed, and then you look at the time evolution. So usually, if you have a system without constraint, what does it mean? So you have a one-to-one correspondence between one point of your phase space and one solution. Okay, so this point can be seen as the initial condition for your solution, and then you end up with one solution evolving in time. This is the time evolution. Evolving in time in your physical phase space. But now that we talked a lot about constraint system, you see that what we have here now is quite different. And we need to make a distinction between the kinematical phase space, which is the initial phase space defined with your initial variable. So for example, here in this case, what is the initial phase space is going to be four-dimensional. So this is the kinematical phase space. Where, so in our case of the parameterized particle, it's going to be four-dimensional. And so we have Q, T, PQ, PT. And of course, we have the canonical Poisson bracket here associated to that. So here, Q, the Poisson bracket between Q and PQ is going to be 1, T and PT is going to be 1, and all the other are going to be 0. But you see that now, starting from one point here, and plus you have constraint. So you have this kinematical phase space plus constraint. And so what does it mean? So your phase space here is four-dimensional. So let's kind of, I cannot draw anything four-dimensional, but just do something more than. OK, so this is your initial phase space. Now you have some constraint. OK, so in this case, you have only one constraint. So it's going to define I don't know if my drawings are going to help you with anything. Very good. So it's going to define a constraint surface. OK, so this is your constraint surface. But again, already on this constraint surface, each point is not going to be in one-to-one correspondence with the solution, okay? Because you have this gauge transformation. So what else do we need to do to go to the physical phase space? So in the physical phase space, then you're going to get this one-to-one correspondence between a point in phase space and a solution. So here for each phase space variable, each constraint is going to define a flow. So what we call a flow is in fact just a curve in phase space. And the fact that here, when we are going to deal with gauge symmetry, so this means that the constraints are going to be first class, and this also means that this constraint surface is preserved by the first class constraint. So this means that all the flow are going to lie down in your from each point you have a. You have a curve starting, and all these points are physically equivalent. So you know that to get to the physical phase space, in addition to solve the constraint, then we have to pick one representative. So here we are dealing with equivalence class, and we are going to pick one representative per gauge orbit. Okay, so this curve, the flow generated by the constraint, are what we call the gauge orbit. Okay. So the constraints are going to, degenerate flow on the constraint surface. And this is what we call the gauge orbit. So let's try to see what does it mean in the case of the parametrized particle.
So you mean, I don't, because the first constraints, this give the constraint surface, and then some other constraints give gauge equivalence?
No, so here, this means that you're going to define this surface by meaning that this is satisfied, okay?
Okay.
So, but then each surface, so now if you look at, for example, here, what are our, so we are going to do that in the case of the parametrized particle. Maybe it's going to become more clear. So this can be seen as mathematically. So this is, we can define this as an equation. And then when we solve, we get a path. We get what we call the flow, or if you want it, the curve in the path integral. Okay, so we're going to do that explicitly in the case of the parametrized particle. And so this is going to be the solution of this, are this flow here, or the curve you have on your constraint surface. But what does it mean? This means that all these points are physically equivalent, okay? Because it's generated by this constraint. So to really get something, a one-to-one correspondence between a point here and a solution, in fact, we need, so what does it mean? This means that when we have gauge symmetry, what we need to know to go from the kinematical phase space to the physical phase space, we need first to solve the constraint, of course, but then we need to divide by the gauge orbit, okay? And divide by the gauge orbit, you need to choose one point. And so, because you see that here, look at, if you do the counting of degrees of freedom, let's take just this simple example. You see that, in fact, here, what you're doing, you have 4 degrees of freedom. But how many do we expect in the physical phase space? Okay, the physical phase space, we know that we want to recover what we started with. This system is very well known, so we know that we want to have a physical phase space of dimension 2, okay? Because it's going to be only one. We want to recover that we can describe our system just in terms of Q and the associated momentum.
So does that mean that each constraint will kill 2 degrees of freedom?
Yeah, when it's a first class constraint, meaning that it's associated to the gauge symmetry, the way you do the counting of degrees of freedom, it's -2, okay? Which is different from if then we're going to see at some point that when we deal with second class constraint, then it's not going to kill twice. But in the case of first class constraint, this is indeed the case, because you need first to implement that. So you see that in this case, it's going to be give you 4 -3, so it's going to be -1, so it's going to be 3. And then you need to choose one representant, so you're going to kill again one additional degrees of freedom. So really, the way you, so here, let's maybe write this explicitly because this is important. So the number of physical degree of freedom, the way you can compute that is, so you start with the number of kinematical degrees of freedom. And then it's going to be minus twice the number of first class constraint. And if you have second class constraint, which is not going to be our case now, but then this would be minus the number of second class. Okay, so let me just check.
I don't see why the gauge equivalence is found by solving the QDS is equal to QC is equal, I mean.
Okay, so let's do it maybe explicitly on this example and maybe it's going to become more clear. Okay. Any questions here? So so let's look at explicitly what is the gauge orbit of the phase space variable generated by C. Okay, so we look at the gauge orbits now. So this means we want to look at this equation. And find the solution of this equation. Okay. So here it's just a linear equation. So you just get that Q of S is going to be okay, where here this is just the initial condition.
And N is equal to 1.
Sorry?
But the N is now 1.
No, so here we're just looking at C, okay? Not H.
Yeah, but by definition, DDS of Q, I mean, this is it. You have written, I've written that it's two times the same stuff, but one is N.
Okay, so but here you can choose. So this is just a way to parameterize your curve inside your, so. You want to choose another name? What? Okay, thanks. I was stuck, so thanks, it's helpful. I was like, no, T is already used, M is not nice, and it's already the mass. I'm not going to use F, but lambda, yeah, is a good choice, thanks. Okay. Then, of course, we look at this one too. So here, if you do that, you just get 1. So this means that plus some constant. And then if we look at the momenta, what do we get? Again, it's, so here it's going to be 0. So this means that this one is a constant. So let's call it 0. And if we do the same thing with we also get 0, but then it's also a constant, but we know that we can use the constraint to relate both, so we can just choose Pt is just minus, and where we used the constraint C. Okay, so these are just going to define curve, like the flows on our constraint surface. And now we want to figure out, we want to find the true degrees of freedom. So one way to do that is to build Dirac observables, okay? So what are Dirac observables? And how many are we expecting here? So I think I already mentioned that yesterday, maybe. So the definition of Dirac observables. Yeah, so let me just. So we want something which is gauge invariant. So gauge invariant means that it's going to be constant on the gauge orbit. Okay. So what are the Dirac observables? So it's the gauge invariant, and if you want, this means that the constant on gauge orbit. So what are we interesting with that? This means that then we these objects are going to they won't have any information of they will only have physical degrees of freedom. Capture only the physical degrees of freedom. So these are really important when we want to go to the to quantize the theory. Okay, and it's also a way to figure out what are the physical degrees of freedom here. So this means that we want that if F is a Dirac observable, then this means that we want this to be satisfied. And so here, as we already mentioned, we start with a four-dimensional phase space, but we know that we're expecting a two-dimensional physical phase space. So this means that here we're expecting two independent Dirac observables. Okay. Since this is going to really capture the physical degrees of freedom. Like, or if you want gauge invariant variables. Okay. So how do we construct Dirac observable? So this is not always easy, and you're going to come back on that, and you're going to see which step is really can be tricky during the tutorial. So here I'm going to choose, of course, a good gauge fixing, but you're going to see that if you don't choose a good gauge fixing during the tutorial, that then you end up with some complicated. Your theory is going to be not easy to interpret. Okay, but so let's here do the simple thing, and because we know how to do that, but of course, in a system it's not always. So how to construct physical and I'm not going to give too many details on the difficulties and everything on that. If you're interested, I can just post additional references on the wiki page. This has been a work done really by Carlo Rovelli mainly, but and a lot by Bianca too. Okay? So I can give you some additional references. But here, let's just do things simply. So the first step is to select as many gauge fixing as there are constraints. So in the case of the parameterized particle, we only have one constraint, so we only need to fix one gauge, and we can just choose. Of course, we know that in this case, since we artificially add the time as a dynamical variable, let's just fix this variable to a fixed parameter. Oops, sorry. So parameterized particle. We can just choose where this tau is a fixed and so you see that now really the idea is because you look at the flow of so Q and T here. So if T is fixed, you see that we can now express R. So this means that we can figure out one, this is going to fix one point of on our gauge orb, okay? Because it's going to fix one value of lambda in this case, because this is what we call a good gauge. In this case, this is a good gauge fixing, okay? And you're going to come back on this notion of good gauge fixing in the tutorial, where you're going to choose, now try to fix something different, and you will see. Then you have some issue of interpretation. But so here, this gauge fixing is good, so this means that it's going to fix one value, it's going to fix one point of the gauge orbit of T, and we can, again, this idea of that we want to define observable in relation to another observable. Here we can now define Q, the observable Q, in relation with the value of T, okay? So this means that we're going to use the fact that we're going to select one point on the gauge orbit of T to fix the value of Q here, okay? So this is the second step. So again, it's in relation to the other. So what we want to do here, it's given a phase space function. And you're going to see that we really recover what you have if you were starting from the unparametrized particle. Okay, so just the free particle. So we define here the associated physical observable associating the value for all points in the gauge orbit. And so the value of the physical observable here on the gauge orbit is given by the value on that point. S where the previous gauge fixing holds, okay? So this means that in particular for the observable associated to Q in the case of the parametrized particle, associated to Q, we're going to get that FQ of tau is the value of Q of S at the gauge. So let me write it, is the value of Q of S at the point of the gauge orbit. Where T of S takes the value tau, okay? Where the gauge fixing is can you read here? Maybe it's too low, sorry. So what does it mean here? This means that we can just plug that into what we have here, okay? And then invert this to get the relation for Q. So here, what does it mean? This means that what we're going to get is going to be Q plus PQ where T is just the initial condition I had here, okay? And so if you compare this to what you would get if you solve here starting from this action, just written of Q, okay, if you solve this, the equation of motion, the solution of the equation of motion is exactly given here by that, okay? And of course, so I told you that we were expecting two independent Dirac variables. So do you see which one, which other one we're going to take here? So the second one we can take is just one associated to the conjugated momentum. Okay, and here in this case is just going to be a constant. Okay. So we just get the second one is just FPQ. And where here this is, a constant. And you can check that indeed this gives a really a complete set of Dirac observable because, so what is the other one, the other observable would be just the one associated with the phase function T, and this would be just a constant because it's equal to tau, and then the conjugated momentum of the observable associated to PT is just, can just be expressed in terms of the observable PQ, okay, because of the constraint. So you see that we only need really two Dirac observable, and the other observable can be expressed in terms of that. And you could check now using this that you can recover really the unparametrized particle, meaning you can look at the Poisson bracket between them, you can compute the physical Hamiltonian with respect to this gauge fixing, and you're going to recover the Hamiltonian you would get in the case of unparametrized particle. And so this means that you really recover the phase space for the original unparametrized particle, including the symplectic structure and its Hamiltonian as physical time evolution parameter. Okay, so here you see that the kind of the time evolution with this tau can be recovered. And it's because here we have chosen this nice gauge fixing, which can be seen as a clock, okay? And but in fact, it's not always easy to find such good gauge fixing. And for example, you could try, so in the tutorial, you're going to try to gauge fix Q, and then you will see that you're not going to have a kind of nice interpretation in terms of time evolution. Okay, so it's not always easy to find a clock for which the time is always going to go forward. Okay, but you're going to see that in the tutorial on Thursday. And here, so everything works well, in fact, because the clock variable, so this one that we have chosen, is the conjugated momenta associated to this variable appear linearly in the constraint. Okay, but you will see that already with Q, if you do that in the constraint, PQ is quadratic. So already you're going to get some issue. And of course, you will see that in relativistic systems, so even just the relativistic particle, but more interestingly for us, GR, then the constraints are going to be quadratic in all the momenta. So it's going to be first difficult to quantize, and it's going to reflect that time and space are on this equal footing, and so we're going to get some issue to find this good clock that we have here, which go always forward. But so in the tutorial, you're going to try to see what happens if, as a clock, you choose Q, where here PQ appears as a quadratic. The momentum is quadratic in the constraint. And you will already see that to interpret what this means in terms of an evolution, this is not easy. Okay, so in GR, it's going to be one issue. Okay, any question on that? Okay, so the next step now is the quantization. So which kind of canonical so of course we are in a canonical framework. We did all this Hamiltonian analysis, so we want to start from that to do the quantization. So now, which kind of canonical quantization procedure do you know? Okay? And which one are we going to use? Because I think the natural one, at least the one you may be familiar with, let me try to get a board. Is going to be the reduced phase space quantization. The next step is now to talk about quantization, and more particularly, we have canonical. But you see that here we have two, in the case of constraints system, we have two phase space, okay? We have the kinematical phase space, and you have the physical phase space. So which one do you quantize? You have the choice. In fact, you can. So the maybe standard quantization procedure is to start from the physical phase space and to quantize this directly. Okay? So the reduced phase space quantization. But in fact, this is not going to be always possible to do that. And in particular, in the case of gravity, it's not always possible because this phase space is not going to be always very nice, okay? Because to get rid of, to go to the physical phase space, you have to divide by the gauge orbit. So usually here, sometimes it's not going to be even a manifold that you're going to end up, because you're going to take the quotient, okay? It's going to be a quotient space. And so this is not really easy to quantize, so it's not. Always possible, okay? So here we implement constraint and we divide by gauge fixing. We divide by the gauge orbit. So what is the other alternative is to start quantizing the kinematical phase space. And this is the idea of Dirac, and it's the one we're going to use. So this means that we're first going to quantize the kinematical phase space, and we're going to get kinematical Hilbert space. Okay, and here we have a quite of well-defined procedure, which is that so the phase space variable are going to turn into self-adjoint operators, and we're going to get this just this relation. So the Poisson bracket now are going to you will need to check that once you define your phase space variable as operator, that now instead of Poisson bracket you get a commutator between them, and you have this this relation. So if here it's equal to 1, here I think you need to, I never remember if it's, it's over or it's, and it's not a minus?
1 over.
Yeah, it's 1 over. Let me check. I think it's that. Yeah, and a minus, no? Minus 1 over. Well, you know that you want some H bar because it's quantum, but then you need to where is this H bar. And so this is going to be the first step. Then here, you remember that you need to implement the constraint. So the second step is going to define. This is step one we're going to do, define this kinematical Hilbert space. Then we're going to define constraint as operator, self-adjoint operator. So this means that we're going to define C hat in H kinematical. So these are self-adjoint operator coming from the constraint. So here you have the constraint C. And then you want to characterize the space of solution of the constraint and define the associated inner product, and here we're going to get to the physical Hilbert space. So this means that we're going to need to solve this kind of constraint. Okay, so this is one step, but then a non-trivial step is then usually to find the inner product. And so the physical inner product, more precisely. Physical inner product. And this is usually the difficult, one of the difficult parts. So tomorrow I'm going to illustrate this very quickly on the parametrized particle because it's everything is quite simple, the parametrized particle. And this was step two that we're going to do. Then the third step is this physical phase space. And of course, then we have seen that physical phase. So here it's kind of, it's two step, okay? We need to find the constraint and then divide by the gauge orbit, which is equivalent to more or less find some Dirac observables, okay? So here we solve the constraint and then we need to define, find a complete set of gauge invariant observables. Of gauge invariant observable. So what does it mean? This means that we want operators commuting with the constraint. And these operators are going to be the question we can address in the generally covariant quantum theory. Okay, so commuting with the constraint. Okay, so tomorrow we are going to do this four steps for in the case of the parametrized particle. For the first one, yeah, we're going to do it very quickly.
So we have a bunch of states, but all and but the ones who have C phi is equal to zero are like equivalent together.
Yeah, so these are the one satisfying. So this is more or less given to define your phase space constraint. Okay, the equivalent of the phase space constraint here.
What and we do is the state like C phi is equal to not zero. We just do not consider them.
Yeah. Okay. So we need to solve. So usually it's more you need to. This is going to be an equation, okay? Especially we're going to see that tomorrow it's very similar to what you, it's just some basic quantum mechanics. So the configuration variables are just going to be quantized as multiplication operator, and the moment are going to be quantized as derivative operator. So you're going to end up just with here, this is just going to give you a differential equation that. In fact, it's just the Schrödinger equation that you can solve. And so here you it's more what is your starting point? So you have a bunch of functions, then you apply this constraint and it's going to reduce the allowed function.